On KSCO and sitting in for Corey today will be Michael Swerling. That's on KSCO. Dr. Joel Wallach on Dead Doctors Don't Lie will be heard on KOMY. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. It's 6 minutes past noon.
Good afternoon. It's time now for the Dr. Corey Gold radio program on KSCO. If you'd like to participate in today's program, call us at 831-479-1080. That's 479-1080. Here now is your host for today's show, Dr. Corey Gold.
That is incorrect. That is incorrect. I am not Dr. Corey Gold. I am Michael L. Swerling, sitting in for Dr. Corey Gold today. Yes, sir. So, anyhow, welcome to the Corey Gold program on AM 1080 KSCO. And, they rounded me up to do the program for today and I think tomorrow. And I think you're going to enjoy both days, because today we have a topic that is one of my favorite topics, and that is the indoctrination of young people in college-age students into one particular political perspective. And there couldn't be a better guest for such a subject. That is the eminent... Now, what are you laughing at, John? What are you laughing at? I'm turning you beet red, you know, and I'm not. I guess I'm giving you a hard time here. This is Dr. John Ellis, Professor Emeritus of German Literature from UC Santa Cruz, and Professor Emeritus means an honorable ex-professor. You're not currently a professor at UC Santa Cruz. You were for, what, some 35, 40 years? Is that right?
Yes, since 1966.
Oh, my. Until?
Well, I retired in 94.
So you became a professor. You became emeritized?
16 years ago.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's no secret that at UC Santa Cruz and at many colleges and universities, it is pretty much by design that professors... are of the liberal or left-wing political persuasion. Is that correct?
I think so. I'm just thinking of your words by design. I think that probably 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't by design. It was a creeping growth of an imbalance. By about 20 years ago, it was becoming clearly a... something that didn't happen by accident.
Who do you think is responsible?
Well, I think it's a national problem. I mean, as the social movements, you know, feminism and civil rights movement moved along, they found a greater and greater place within the academy, within the university world. And... pretty soon, there started to be an expectation that the political positions that those people occupied were the correct ones. And so you started to see things like, say, a position in art history, I remember, advertised in a way that made it almost impossible that the appointee would be other than a social activist. And the proportion of people in the humanities and social sciences, not in the hard sciences, the proportion of people in the social sciences and humanities who are on the left has grown steadily. And the problem with that is not the leftness, it's that the absence of a debate between the two sides
exactly
drops the quality sharply, very sharply, because when you don't have an intellectual opponent there to keep you honest, you get lazy. You get sloppy, you get incompetent, and that's the situation we're in right now, where quite honestly, the intellectual level has become trivial in some courses, and that's a great shame for students. That they are learning in some cases, not by any means all, they're learning a party line more than they're learning how to think.
Now, when you first started, that was not an issue. Like in 1966, is that a correct statement?
Absolutely, it wasn't.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, most people think of the Santa Cruz campus as being fairly left, and if you ask them, well, which departments would be most left?
Community studies.
Normally, you think community studies, sociology.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was 1968, the campus hired two very senior, very distinguished, conservative professors in sociology. Now, people are shocked when I point that out to them.
Mention some names, please.
The two were Cesar Grania and Ivan Valier. They were first-rate people. They were very well respected by their colleagues, too. They were not pariahs.
And this is 1966. 68, you said, right?
I think it was something like 68. Might have been 70.
Because that was the year that I graduated from Santa Cruz High School and mm-hmm. went directly to UCSC in the fall of 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two names that I never remember even hearing.
Well, sadly, Ivan Valier died of cancer within 3 or 4 years. And Cesar Grania got a very good offer of a job, I think it was UC San Diego, and preferred to live down there. So their impact on the campus was short-lived. Nevertheless, though, the sociology department in those days was hiring very senior, very well-known, very articulate conservatives. And I can remember a faculty senate meeting where Cesar Grania turned the tide of a faculty debate single-handedly. That was how much influence and respect he had.
Wow. That must have been something to behold. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a recording of it somewhere lurking around.
You know, there probably is.
Wow.
We should get it, yes.
Yeah. See if you can get your hands on that.
Yeah.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah. So it wasn't always the case that it was left, the Academy was left, or Santa Cruz was left, and it wasn't always the case even that sociology and community studies.
So what happened and when and why?
Well, I'm afraid the beginnings of it really do go back to affirmative action, probably.
Affirmative action.
What happened, I think, was this, that when affirmative action began to be a serious consideration in the 70s, the people who were most concerned to get more minorities, more women on the faculty, tended to be left. I mean, they tended to be activists. That's not unsurprising.
Yeah. And so that's fine. I mean, there should be more women.
But the people who were most concerned about the problem were on the left. And we're still in the realm of things that are completely normal and expected and legitimate. But since those people had more influence, because they were the ones who were pushing most, they had the most influence in who came in, the new appointees. In practice, the first generation of affirmative action appointees were quite strongly left. And after a couple of years, this began to tilt the whole complexion of the faculty in the direction of the left. And after a while, the imbalance got to the point where the character of the left changes.
Now, you're talking about UCSC in particular, right?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about in general? This was all going on throughout the country at the same time at other campuses as well, you think?
Yeah. I think I'd put it this way. I saw it with my own eyes at UCSC, so I could actually see it happening. Speaking to friends on other campuses, I learned that exactly the same thing was going on. The problem comes when you have such an imbalance that there's no effective voice for one side, then the question of quality starts to come in. The absence of one side in a debate means that the other side of the debate gets just low quality, sloppy, poor.
Right.
I mean, just careless.
Uh-huh.
No one likes to admit it, but what everybody needs is to have opponents around. People who, if you say something silly, will jump on you.
Yeah.
And that means you don't say so many silly things. Now, if you don't have someone of another political persuasion sitting there ready to jump when you say something just that's not very well thought out, sooner or later, stuff that's not very well thought out is going to be the norm. And so, in other words, the left slides, the sort of rational, reasonable left slides over a period of time into the radical, much less coherent left. And it's, at the moment, I would say, there's a great deal of the kind of radical politics that deals in conspiracy, rather wild conspiracy theories. You know, there's a conspiracy of the rich against the poor, conspiracy of one race against another. Very unrealistic kind of stuff. Very stuff that, if there was an effective debate, the two sides, two really powerful sides, would be winnowed out quickly, because it's not good enough to survive. It's so weak, it's so unable to defend itself, it'll go. Because people on the left will soon learn that you don't get anywhere saying silly things when there are very well-informed intellectual opponents ready to jump on you.
Sure.
Now, it's the absence of that discipline, you know, that force that's going to compel you to think hard about what you're saying and to become better, but to become intellectually, you know, more viable, more sensible. When you have the absence of that discipline, it's a slow slide downhill, and that's what's happened. And what we're seeing now is a situation where deans and vice chancellors really have got to step in to do something about the slide in quality.
What's the something that they should do?
Well, the first thing, for example, they should do is take politics departments. That's my favorite example, because, you know, it's so obvious you need both sides in a politics department. In several departments, I think San Diego, I think Santa Barbara, I think Santa Cruz, there is either zero conservative voices or virtually zero conservative voices, and they're running PhD programs in politics. Now, you know, the department excludes one half of the spectrum of thought in its field. It just,
That's not acceptable.
Well, it's...
That's shameful.
It is shameful.
And why is it tolerated?
It's tolerated because it has occurred slowly. You know, the old phenomenon of the frog in the pot doesn't notice as the water temperature rises. I think, to be fair to everybody, they didn't notice the water rising. And by the time it's risen enough, people are scared to make a fuss. And deans now don't have the courage to say, you must stop doing this.
I don't know if it was necessary, or if Dean McHenry, the original chancellor of UCSC, the founding chancellor, would have ever tolerated that. But I was blown away one day in this very room in 1993 when I was interviewing Chancellor McHenry. I think he had retired some 18, 19 years earlier. And I knew Chancellor McHenry when I was a student there, and I was active with the student college radio station, which at that time was not a broadcast station. It was a closed circuit station that went out, that was modulated on the cable to the college dormitories. Later it became an FM broadcast signal that we now know as KZSC. But what I was amazed in talking to Dean McHenry, sitting in that very chair where you are, John, today, is when he made the statement that never in a million years would I dream that this Oxford, you know, individual college concept where they were all part of a greater whole university would result in an institution of indoctrination rather than an institution of education rather than an institution of indoctrination, which it became. I couldn't believe that he said that back then. Well, so obviously it was bothering him then.
Yeah, no, towards the end of his life, it did worry him. Now, we should make clear, we're talking only about the social sciences and the humanities. The UCSC has wonderful departments of physics, of astronomy, of earth sciences, is wonderful engineering.
Natural sciences as well.
Yeah, more the mathematical kind of, the mathematical sciences, sure. The ones that draw heavily on mathematics, they're the very, very best, I think. So we're really talking about one particular area of the campus, and you can see that that area is dwindling in size. I mean, students are voting with their feet. So, for example, community studies, you mentioned. Now, that had degenerated into teaching courses in how to organize a revolution. It was a straight Marxist outfit.
Uh-huh.
Well, the students simply didn't go to the classes. It's just been abolished.
I'm surprised to hear that. So that's why it was...
It's abolished. It is now abolished, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, and
were there not tenured professors who were in charge of that?
Yeah, but they were reassigned to other departments, I think.
There was a gentleman named Professor Friedland, I think, because
he was always in the sociology department as well as uh-huh. in community studies. Yeah. So essentially, that's been shut down, and it's been shut down because it wasn't viable. No one wanted it anymore. Now, in my department...
I'm surprised. I thought there were a lot of people who around here who would want to get college credit for learning how to be an activist.
Well, you know, the students are not quite that stupid, it turns out. I mean, the students really do want to get an education. Well, let me give you another example. My department, literature, had its normal major program in English literature, French literature, German literature, and so on. Now, one day, a group of activists said they wanted one called world literature. I didn't really mean world literature. What it meant was third world literature. Island calypsos and stuff like that. Well, when they put it on, the number of people who came to each of the courses was about maybe four or five. And pretty soon the dean said, cut this out. This is wildly expensive, and it doesn't really do anything for anybody. And so basically the radicals had once again been defeated by just the fact that the students weren't interested. So back they went to Shakespeare, which, you know, always had classes of 200.
Well, in recent years, I've heard time and again that students are becoming more politically conservative. Have you heard that too?
Yeah, I've heard it. I'm not sure I know whether it's true.
It certainly doesn't seem to be true at UCSC, because now I have a personal challenge. I've suddenly got an idea that we have so many interesting speakers on KSCO who you know, guests on our talk shows and so forth, that I would like to bring to town here and have do talks, have big lectures, you know, at the Coconut Grove or the Civic Auditorium, or what about UCSC, you know? And there's some wonderful venues at UCSC. There's some wonderful theater facilities there that can hold hundreds of people. There might be one or two that can hold more than 1,000. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Up at UC Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
But try to get it to happen. I mean, it's like pulling teeth from a cow. I mean, I cannot get any information about how one goes about getting a list of the various locations, the various halls that could be available to hire for such an event. I was told, well, you have to have a student organization sponsor you. I said, oh, okay, well, great. So where can I get a list of student organizations? Oh, that's not public information. Come again? It's not public information at a publicly taxpayer-supported institution?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was told.
Yeah.
Like it's a secret. Good luck if you can somehow find out a list of students. So you go down the student organization. So you go down the list and see who might be what group might be an appropriate sponsor of Roy Masters or Alex Jones. Or these are KSCO hosts, not hosts, but people who appear on the radio station from time to time. Some are hosts, some are guests. that I think would be great at UCSC, that should be exposed up there and would cause a stir and would raise some eyebrows and maybe get people thinking along a different line that they are. And it doesn't seem that it's going to happen. Now, in the last 2 years, when I've been paying particular attention, I am not aware of any more than two conservative speakers who have been invited to and have appeared on campus. One of the speakers was David Horowitz, who is a well-known former lefty turned conservative, and his whole mission in life is to blow the whistle on one-sidedness and unfair exposure in universities and colleges in the United States to one political point of view, which happens to be that of the left, and the fact that most colleges and universities do everything they can to stifle any kind of debate or any kind of presentation of other alternate points of view, and stifling of religious points of view or whatever. And David Horowitz is a great guy for doing that. I saw him, and I saw the way he was heckled a couple years ago. More recently, what was the name of that person? D'Souza?
Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh D'Souza.
Yeah.
And I went to Merrill Dining or Merrill Cultural Center, I think it was last week, expecting to watch some fireworks. There were no fireworks. But everybody in the group, that as far as I could tell, was like the speaker was preaching to the choir, you know. It's like,
I think that's right. I that's California Association of Scholars, which I'm president of, sponsored that talk by Dinesh D'Souza. I didn't notice a single member of the faculty in the audience. There was an audience of about 100 people. Uh-huh. It's a good audience. A lot of students. But this was a point of view that is not available elsewhere on the campus. None of the faculty had any curiosity about coming and starting a dialogue, starting a debate, just having, you know, an interesting time just picking another point of view apart.
Yeah. Well, I thought the program a couple years ago that I saw, it was unfortunate that the person was heckled, but He was able to ultimately give his talk.
Oh yeah, he did well.
Yeah. And he did, and so did Dinesh D'Souza. But and of course I'm happy that he wasn't heckled. But it didn't seem that was a very worthwhile event, because everybody was there, you know, was already a believer. So what's the point, you know?
Well, I didn't get that impression with David, David Horowitz.
No, absolutely not.
But with Dinesh D'Souza, I think you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. It didn't make a dent on the dialogue taking place on the campus, I think.
Right. We're talking with Dr. John Ellis, Professor Emeritus of German Literature from University of California, Santa Cruz, and one of the only conservative professors from UCSC, and we're going to open up the phone lines. It's the Corey Gold radio program. MZ sitting in for Corey, who is out doing something very special today. I might give you a clue about what that might be later on. But in any case, if you want to call and participate in the discussion about indoctrination and where we are in the United States in terms of indoctrination rather than education of our college-age students, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 479-1080 in area 831. The email address is my own email address. That's mz@ksco.com. Why is it so hard to get approval for an alternative point of view person to speak at UCSC? I don't think that it should be so difficult, but it is. And you might be able to help us in that regard. I'm hoping you can, because you might be our ticket to get in, to get some exposure at UCSC. Now, why is that so important to me? I don't know. Maybe I should just forget about it and just go hire the Civic Auditorium for some of these speakers, or the Coconut Grove or the Rio Theater or someplace. But I really want, there's enough interest and some of the regular guests and hosts that we carry on this station that it's high time we did some special events here. So it's your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO, MZ in for Corey Gold. It's 12:30 p.m. let's take a commercial break, and when we come back, we will open the phone lines again. It's 479-1080 if you want to give us a shout and become part of this program today, and we would love to hear from you. So stay with us. A lot more ahead.
At Sam Adams, there is a rhythm of the seasons, so we've developed styles of beer to accompany that.
We brew Sam Adams Oktoberfest, Winter Lager, Noble Pils, and right now, there's Summer Ale.
Samuel Adams Summer Ale is a flavorful wheat beer. It has a very nice spice note.
It has a little lemon zest and a historic brewing spice called Grains of Paradise. It's citrusy.
Lemon. Flavorful, refreshing.
Wow. Sam Adams Summer Ale, it's just something about it. It's like totally reminds you of summer.
Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass. Safe and responsibly.
It's time for some good old-fashioned down-on-the-farm fun at the Ag History Project's 9th Annual Day on the Farm at the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds. Hello, Michael Olson here. You've probably heard me talking about the joy of local food here on the Food Chain Radio Show. Well, you've listened long enough. Now it's time to enjoy some of that down-on-the-farm fun for yourself at the Ag History Project's Day on the Farm. Take your family and friends out to the fairgrounds and enjoy all kinds of day-on-the-farm family fun, like watching Fred Silva's giant draft horses, dodging antique tractors, putt-putting about, butter-churning, candle-making, games and crafts for the kids. Oh, don't forget to go hungry for the chicken barbecue with all the fixings, yum, and the live music featuring Calaveras and Michael Gaither. Yahoo! Enjoy 140 years of local agriculture history up front and live at the Ag History Project's Chicken Barbecue and Concert starting 6 p.m. Saturday and Day on the Farm activities Sunday 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds.
Celebrate 10 heroes from our community at the annual Red Cross Heroes Breakfast Wednesday, May 19th at the Seascape Golf Club in Aptos. These heroes are members of our community who have performed a life-saving act or who have shown an extraordinary spirit of compassion. Is one of them your neighbor? For information about the Heroes Breakfast, call the Santa Cruz County Chapter of the American Red Cross at 831-462-2881 or click on sccredcross.org.
Hello there, it's MZ with a message so important that you must pay attention or run the risk of having to kick yourself in the near future. It's longevity product sale time at your favorite radio station this Saturday and Sunday. And this time, we're pulling out all the stops. Think about all the wonderful health, weight loss, skin care, mineral makeup, sports, and energy drink products you hear advertised all the time on KSCO. They will all be on sale at KSCO Garage this Saturday, May 15th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and on Sunday morning, May 16th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Now, mind you, these are not ordinary, boring, run-of-the-mill, out-of-date products. They are fresh, truly special, and very exciting products. The kind of product you can feel smart, proud, and all-around good consuming and sloshing all over yourself. Who knows, they might even help your sex life. And remember, the more you buy, the better we will feel. So seriously, plan to attend and stock up at KSCO Garage, 2300 Portola Drive, Santa Cruz, this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and this Saturday 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. See you there.
Hey, we're having a good time today. Filling in for Corey Gold. It's MZ and Dr. John Ellis. And we're talking about indoctrination at UCSC and other educational institutions. Should they not be called educational institutions? Should they be called indoctrination institutions? I don't know. Give us a call, 479-1080, if you have something to contribute along the lines in this topic, or send an email to mz@ksco.com. Chris in Santa Cruz, welcome to the Corey Gold program. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. I want to thank the professor for not engaging in the groupthink, I think, that takes place at the university here. You know, you were talking a little bit earlier about finding a place. I don't see why it needs to be at university. You know, I just
You're right. I just have this idea that wouldn't it be nice to kick up a little bleep at the university?
I think that's a great idea too. I don't know how receptive.
I'm just playing a natural bleep kicker, you know.
But I had the pleasure last night of shaking the hand of Sheriff Mack down at the Live Oak Grange Hall on 17th Avenue. That was a really wonderful experience, and we got a huge turnout from the Freedom Forum last night. And I think that's a good spot to bring somebody, say Alex Jones or somebody like that.
Where was that?
The Live Oak Grange Hall.
How many people can fit there?
It got to be standing room only.
So how many is that?
It was probably over 200.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I think that's a little small, from the early indications from our feelers that we put out on the radio. I think we're going to need 500, 600, 800, you know, capacity.
Oh, well, I wish my house was big enough.
Yeah. Anyhow. That's what we're, in fact, you know, we sort of need that. I need to be pretty confident that we're going to get that kind of turnout in order to really do the deal. So,
can I ask the professor a question?
Sure, yeah.
Professor, do you think the so-called anarchists who are creating mayhem in our town are any way connected to any movement going on at the university?
Let me turn his mic on. I'm sorry.
I don't have any personal knowledge of that. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the general tenor of political discourse on the campus is the one thing you can say about it is it's unrealistic. It does not take place in the real world of the day-to-day American politics, the give and take between the two parties. It is very unreal. It is very concerned with rather loopy conspiracy theories for the most part. Is it likely that would connect up with anarchist nonsense in the town? I don't know. It's possible, but I have no personal knowledge of that.
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Thank you, Chris. Next caller is Mark in Watsonville. Mark, you're on the air on KSCO.
Yeah, Dr. Lewis, my daughter graduated from UCSB, and she got a degree in cellular and molecular biology, and she was affiliated with Stevenson College up there. And we went into the experience with our eyes open. She was actually on the leadership forum and then also wrote for Redwood Review, which is up there as an alternative publication. But what's interesting, you know, survived the experience and everything was fine. But to go to a commencement exercise up there is, I'd rather put hot needles in my eyes to do that again. You sit there for a couple hours and these deans drone on with their horrible, offensive, intolerant leftist drivel, and it just goes on and on, and then some of the students will get on. And it's just, you can tell that, you know, a good chunk of the parents in the audience are totally turned off by this, upset by this. You know, this is their special
and they're
moment.
And they're paying the bills. That's
they
so funny.
Paid the bills, and this is their final insult from UCSB is to sit through a commencement exercise up there in the quarry. It's a horrible experience. I've been to a couple of them.
Well, I've been to more than you have, and not only that, when I was dean of the graduate division, there were only three campus-wide administrative officials, and that was the chancellor, the vice chancellor, academic affairs, and me. So I had to take my share of the college graduations. I had to officiate at about maybe two of them, and so I had to listen to this stuff as well. You're absolutely right. Those college addresses, usually by an invited speaker, they were off the charts, juvenile leftism, which was, I can't honestly imagine that more than 10 people in the audience would have had anything but contempt for them. And it was a terrible thing to do to parents. I don't know how you deal with that. I think when I was there, the thing was in the hands of, I think, students invited. In the college, students invited the commencement speaker. That should stop, I think.
Well, anyhow.
If those are the results.
Yeah, Mark. I forgot. There was a question I was going to ask you. Oh, you've heard Roy Masters on KSCO, right?
I have heard of him, yeah.
Okay. So Roy would be a great, great lecturer to the students on the subject of brainwashing. It'd be a fascinating, fascinating thing. Do you think there is a snowball's chance in hell, John, that I could ever... You hadn't heard of Roy Masters until I told you about him last night on the telephone. You Googled Do you think there's any kind of a chance that someone like Roy Masters, particularly Roy Masters himself, would ever be permitted to be on campus to talk about brainwashing?
Oh, I think it's possible. You got to get a student organization or a faculty organization to sponsor it. There must be some student religious clubs, I should think, that might be interested.
Maybe you and I can talk about that, because I would be very interested in making that happen.
Yeah.
Again, if it wasn't at the campus, we can do it somewhere else, but I think it would be particularly poignant at the campus. It's MZ here filling in for Dr. Corey Gold on the Noontime program on your favorite radio station and mine and everybody's is who knows about us. That's AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. And it's the Noontime program. Normally in this chair is Dr. Corey Gold. He is out today, and we are inviting discussion from you on the topic of indoctrination and why everything has to be from one perspective only. And we'd like to hear from you, 479-1080 in Area 831, or shoot an email to mz@ksco.com. Rowena in Soquel is our next caller. Rowena, you're on the air.
Hello, Jay-Z. Hello, Dr. Evan. Really,
Ellis. Everybody's calling him it's Dr. John Ellis.
I beg your pardon, Doctor. Interesting discussion where you're talking about indoctrination. It seems to me that it's not only contained in the university system, but the results of them seems to be very far-reaching. And I would respectfully point out the current situation that we're in with the present government. Do you think? It seems to me that it's so closed and one-sided that rules and regulations have been broken and new ones have been presented with only one thought. There's no questioning. And the questioning that are placed are just overrided and poofed off like that. What do you think of that?
Well, I think the political discourse in the whole country has suffered from what's going on campus. And I think myself that probably the Democratic Party at the moment is way too influenced by university intellectuals and not enough. And I say that as someone who's lived among university intellectuals all his working life and been one of them. But I think that they lack a crucial ingredient, and that is common sense. And I think at the moment I would say that Democrats probably have a little bit too much of the one ingredient, the university intellectuals, and not quite enough of the common sense of ordinary people.
Aren't you being kind? Yeah, that's what I think. Anyhow, so thank you, Rowena, for your call to the Corey Gold program.
Thank you.
Here's Georgia in Capitola. Hey, Georgia, you're on the air on KSCO.
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
First, I wanted to thank you for that lecture that I was able to attend because you announced it on the radio at the school recently. It was fantastic to hear another point of view in this town. And I hope there is more of that. Looking forward to Alex.
Well, John, with Georgia, John, with your connections up there at the campus, do you have more in the works here, or is it so difficult that it's all you can do to do one every couple of years or so?
Well, the trouble is that the organization that I'm president of covers the nine campuses, so that, you know, if we can get $20,000, then we have to split that nine ways.
Yeah, where does the $20,000, for example, come from?
Well, foundations. There are foundations that are very much want this kind of thing to happen. That talk that you're talking about by Dinesh D'Souza was sponsored by the Intercollegiate Studies Institute and the California Association of Scholars. Both provided part of the funding. There were foundations like the Bradley Foundation, the Carthage Foundation, and so on.
Oh, I know about the Bradley Foundation.
Yeah,
great.
Well, there's a local board member that we both know, Tom Smallwood. So it's serious amounts of money that you have to raise. And for me, to get one talk on the Santa Cruz campus, I have to get money for a talk on every campus. So, you know, you can.
No, wait a minute. What? Because that's the terms of the money, or?
No, it's just that I my brief is the nine campuses, the ten campuses rather.
So it wouldn't be fair for you to concentrate on the campus that's in your hometown.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're getting an inordinate amount of your attention.
In the last 6 months, we've had a talk on the Berkeley campus, talk on the Santa Cruz campus, two talks on the UCLA campus, because UCLA is such a big base and a lot of people in the area that it draws in people from Irvine and Riverside campuses anyway. So, but yeah, I'd like to have more talks. It's a question of raising money to get the speakers.
Okay.
Well, Michael, my question is this. I don't understand how we got here. I have a college student who started at Cabrillo, is now in San Diego finishing up, and has had to keep his conservative viewpoint very quiet during his college career for fear of failure or for fear of whatever from the professors. I thought you sent your children to college so that they learn to think for themselves and have a wide horizontal scope of understanding. How did we get to a point where we brainwash these children to one point of view, and it's across the country? Who allowed that? Why isn't there some kind of regulation as to how you teach, what you teach? I don't understand it.
It's a very big question. I mean, you're talking quite justifiably as if this is unusual for the university world. And I'd like to believe that's true, but I'm not sure it is. It wasn't this way after the Second World War, but the Second World War was a very unusual time.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in the Second World War, in 1945-7, people came back from the war. Now, what that meant was that the people who were professors had 5 or 6 years out of the academy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the moment, right now, what happens is a young person goes to do his undergraduate degree and then graduate degree and then becomes a professor. So, in other words, they're in the classroom all their lives. They just change from the back of the classroom to the front of the classroom at some time in their 20s. Now, they don't have a lot of real-world experience.
Yeah.
And that means they don't have a lot of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
But back after the Second World War, those professors, there was a unique generation of professors. Those people had 5 or 6 years of the real world, and it was a very real, real world, right? There was bombs exploding around them and their buddies dying in their arms. I mean, these were people who saw a lot more of life in those 5 years than most people do anyway. So when they came back, and then by the 60s, these are the people running the universities. They're the department chairs. They're doing the hiring. These are very mature, very experienced people, realistic, with a bunch of common sense from their life experiences. And my question now, in my mind, is was that the unusual generation? And is this the usual one? I can remember when I first told my father I was going to be a professor. He was very disappointed. And I was very surprised. I didn't understand this. So I said, what's the matter? I mean, he said, well, I sort of wanted something better for you. He said, professors are all cranks and crackpots. I thought at the time, gee, Dad, that's nice of you. That's a real vote of confidence in my choice. But now I can see he was talking about the university world he knew from the 30s, which was dominated by communists. Now, I wonder, I hope that what we've seen in the last 20 years in the academy in this country is unusual and that we're going to snap back to something.
The thing that I don't understand, Dr. Ellis, these very kids that are protesting up there about their tuition going up, et cetera, the cost of college in Berkeley going up, these kids aren't taught to understand a healthy economy, a healthy tax revenue is what provides those things for them.
No, in fact,
and I don't understand why they don't connect those dots, or why the professors don't connect it.
The professors don't get it.
They don't have a clue. That's why
the atmosphere on campus up at UCSC is virulently anti-capitalist. Capitalism is the evil. Now, I mean, I like you. I see students demonstrating about the fact they have to pay another $270
right.
a semester for their fees, which is a steep increase. And they, you know, the demonstration is all anti-capitalist rhetoric. It never seems to occur to these people that it's the failure of the economy,
right.
the capitalist economy, that is the problem. Now, in fact, I wrote a piece recently in which I pointed out that California has the worst business climate in the country. I mean, it's really a catastrophe. We have the highest individual income tax rate. We have the highest capital gains tax rate. We have the highest sales tax rate. You know, some states have sales tax and others no income tax. Others have income tax and no sales tax. We have both, and we have the highest in both. And people are leaving the state in droves. Businesses are leaving right and left.
Right.
And the unemployment rate in California is 12.6 or 12.7. Now, that's about 3 points worse than the national average. And you'd think that students, intelligent people, would ask themselves, what is it about this state
right.
that makes the economy 3 points worse than the national average when we've got so much going for us? California's a wonderful state, all sorts of resources. Well,
but our government
the answer is that we have a legislature that is goofy. That really does things that are counterproductive and wrecks the economy of the state. Mm-hmm. Now, which way do those students vote? They're all voting for those people who are wrecking the economy of California, creating unemployment of 12.6%, and putting up their own fees.
Georgia, real quickly here before we move on to a commercial break, is it your son who goes to school at San Diego?
Yes.
And did he grow up conservative, or did he become conservative?
No, he grew up, we're conservative. He grew up conservative. And he really had a hard time at Cabrillo.
Cabrillo, really?
Yes,
I hadn't heard that before.
Wow. Yeah, and so even at that level, it was an issue. I have a hard time living in this county, to be honest with you. That's why I loved going to the school the other night and actually hearing someone who was talking some kind of sense. You just can't get it here. And after listening to you, Dr. Ellis, I'm even more depressed because I really think we're fighting something that's huge. I don't know how we're going to... Our own government doesn't understand what you just said about what it takes to grow a healthy economy. So if they aren't getting it back there, what hope do we have?
Well, it is a bad situation. I mean, in California,
Someone will certainly call next hour and give us all some hope. For some change.
Yeah, I hope.
Let's have some hope and some change.
I appreciate your time. And Michael, let's do try to, if in any way, get those kids exposed to some kind of thinking.
Well, I think Alex Jones will have no problem with it because he plays well with the hard right and the hard left.
Right.
People in between are scared, you know what? From
yes.
So.
Well, I'll be.
But
there.
Tomorrow, tune in. Okay, you bet, Georgia. Thanks for calling the program. By the way, gang, remember tomorrow to tune into this program because the first hour, We're going to run an interview that was pre-recorded where Alex Jones is interviewed by my friend who is the owner of Radio Inc. magazine, a major radio trade industry publication. And I've talked about this before. I talked about it on the Saturday special. The current issue has Alex Jones on the cover. My friend Eric did what I told him that he really should do if he's smart, and that's begin to recognize a possible sea change here. Because everybody is not just a plain old neocon, right, left, you know, conservative, liberal. Alex Jones is someone that's very, very different, and people are beginning to pay attention to the main, more and more of the mainstream beginning to pay attention. So hour number two is going to be an interview with Alex Jones, pre-recorded. And hour number one tomorrow will be that interview. And hour number two, we hope we'll have Alex on with us. So we're working on that. So it's the Corey Gold Show on your favorite radio station. And we will be taking a commercial break and coming back with hopefully more of your phone calls to 479-1080 in area 831. So get on the phone, hop on the phones and call right now if you want to get on next hour.
Blast off at the American Le Mans Series Motorway and feel the ground shake as the hottest cars on earth ignite the West Premier Race Venue. Meet the drivers and join the launch party in the pre-race open grid as you get up close to the supermodels of racing, the exotic Le Mans prototypes, May 21st through 23rd at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, where real high-tech racing action happens. Buy tickets today, Ticketmaster.com or MazdaRaceway.com.
The Eagle has landed.
Energy. We use it in a variety of ways. And while some of us use more than others, chances are you probably never think about energy or where it comes from. But we do. At PG&E, we are passionate about energy. How to make it cleaner, more efficient, and especially how to use less of it. So we're making our grid smarter and more reliable. This means we'll be able to be more efficient with energy, sending power only to where it's needed. A smarter grid will also help us increase our use of clean, renewable resources like the sun and wind. Because a clean, energy-rich California is what we're all after. And that starts with using less of what we have. Because the less juice you use, the more there is to go around. So use less of us. When was the last time you heard a company say that? To learn more about how PG&E is planning for the future of energy, visit WeCanDoThis.com.
Morning there, sir.
Hey, I want you to do a radio ad about Geico's fast and easy claim service. Well, here's a list of things to talk about.
Goodness, lot to say here. 24/7 help with many claims settled in 48 hours, convenient auto repair express shops, outstanding emergency road service.
What if you sang a jingle or something?
Couldn't do that, sir. There's already a nice tune at the end of all my commercials.
There is?
Yeah, little guitar strum. Kind of goes like...
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Today, I thought it'd be nice to have a bit of music while we talk about Geico's great savings. So I made a little mixtape for you, if you don't mind. For over 70 years, Geico has been saving millions of people money on their car insurance. We're talking savings of 15% or more. So just sit back and relax knowing that Geico's... Oh... I forgot that was on there.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
It's a fact. You and I now eat food that travels, on average, over 1,000 miles from where it was grown. And so we wonder, what's in this hamburger? Why are they irradiating spinach? What's killing our bees? Are we running short of water? Why is China growing our apples? Is cheap food really cheap? What will happen to us if we can no longer grow our own food? Join me, Michael Olson, Saturday at 9 a.m. for some Food Chain Radio right here on the Big One, AM 1080 KSCO. It's you and me, and What's Eating What Radio, Saturday at 9 a.m. on the Food Chain.
Can you believe it? It's like a minute went by and it's been a whole hour. Gosh. Anyhow, that's the end of hour number one. And there's another hour ahead, so do stay with us, and we want to hear from you, okay? So that's about it, gang. We're talking with Dr. John Ellis. We will have him here for the next hour. And it's the Corey Gold radio program. MZ filling in for Dr. Corey, who will be back on Monday. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 1 p.m.
Fox News Radio, Elisa Brady. All that talking by the Times Square bombing suspect leading to federal raids in four northeast states today and three more arrests.
Several individuals who were encountered during those searches have been taken into federal custody for alleged immigration violations.
Congress getting the news right from Attorney General Eric Holder at a previously scheduled hearing about the war on terror. Two of the new suspects arrested in suburban Boston and a third man in Maine. The feds honing in on how Faisal Shahzad allegedly got the cash to pay for the SUV used in the attempted bombing and for the plane ticket he used to try to leave the country. Some of the Times Square investigators will get a personal thank you from President Obama, who's heading to Manhattan for a fundraiser next hour. He stopped in Buffalo first. Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz live at the White House with more.
The president apparently never saw a billboard erected by a businessman who lost his business that said, "Dear Mr. President, I need a freaking job." But the president did come to upstate New York to say he's working on it and that four straight months of job creation is a good sign.
So this month was better than last month. Next month's going to be stronger than this month. And next year is going to be better than this year.
The president insisting that his policies are especially helping small businesses like the one where he spoke, noting that $7 billion in stimulus funds are going to help small businesses. Lisa?
Mike, Republicans say the president's policies will hurt long-term growth. Fewer Americans signing up for unemployment checks for a fourth straight week, but Wall Street back to worrying. The Dow down more than 115 points at the closing bell amid concern in part about whether recent higher consumer spending can last. They've got some disappointing earnings forecasts in from companies including Kohl's. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Because their existence in our country remains incongruous, let's examine sanctuary cities in the U.S. How long have they been allowed to flourish, and more importantly, why? Surely there were none when the 13 states were born in 1776. For those of you who don't know, sanctuary cities are places that welcome and protect known illegals in our country. Also, for your information, there are 31 sanctuary cities in our country. Los Angeles was the first. That was in 1979. San Francisco is one of the very active ones. It protects various illegal incidents that would otherwise not be tolerated by any other cities in our country. New York City is another. These 31 American cities have ordinances banning city employees and police from asking about immigration status. Some states forbid sanctuary cities because they know it undermines the laws of the state. Why should there be places in the U.S. which encourage and condone illegal behavior and are protected and coddled for breaking our laws? Those leaders of sanctuary cities could agree that because we're a free nation, people should have the right to change the laws if they can get away with it. That sounds crazy to me, but that's exactly what sanctuary cities do. Very interesting, though, right now, and what the governor of Arizona did a while ago to protect her state, which is overrun with illegals and their problems, all sanctuary cities are crying out and accusing Arizona of committing the shameful act of possibly inquiring that people who look Mexican or Spanish should show proof of citizenship. The federal government refuses to keep the border closed, so those numerous problems with illegals must be dealt with by the Arizona governor. Our bleeding heart liberals think it's unforgivable to embarrass any Spanish-looking person if he or she is here illegally? Why are we concerned about their tender feelings if they cross the border and break our laws? If they break into your home, would you still be polite and gentle with their feelings? If I tried to enter Mexico illegally, I would either be shot or incarcerated, or maybe even both. U.S. federal and state leaders should develop some backbone and close and protect our borders now, right now, and eliminate sanctuary cities, or our federal and state laws will soon become meaningless. The world should be laughing at us for tolerating sanctuary cities. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
Your KSCO Central Coast weather. Sunny skies with highs today in the upper 50s to mid-70s. Western